Blog Talk Radio.
Given what most Americans believe, the next statement may be more shocking than any previous. The fact is, the United States is not a country, but a corporation contractually created by the Constitution. Your state is a country, per the law, and your original citizenship is of that country. Our founders instituted themselves to be first and foremost citizens of their respective states. As of 1787, those states already had formed a union, and they created the Constitution for the purpose of perfecting that union in forming a national government. They did not intend that the new nation have any jurisdiction or powers over the states or their citizens that were not specifically enumerated in the Constitution. They stated this point quite clearly in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution. They granted the United States exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square as may become the seat of the government of the United States, our District of Columbia, and to exercise authority over all places purchased by the consent of the states. And that is all. The framers further secured the rights of the people with the 9th and 10th Amendments in the Bill of Rights. In the 9th, they established that the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And in the 10th, they made clear that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. The only way the federal government can have any jurisdiction beyond these constitutional clauses is by written permission or contract. Which leads us to another piece of the puzzle, the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, ratified in 1868 following the Civil War. As barbaric as it may sound today, the black slaves, prior to the conclusion of the Civil War, were legally considered to be property, with none of the rights or privileges of free-born people, only duties. The money interests took advantage of America's desire to free the slaves and found a way to use the swiftly adopted post-war constitutional amendments to enslave all of the people. The deceit is in the wording of both the 13th and 14th Amendments. You will note that the 13th Amendment provides that neither slavery nor involuntary servitude shall exist within the United States. But why the emphasis on involuntary servitude? Isn't it the same thing as slavery? Sure it is. But they had to mention the concept of involuntary servitude because they wished to retain another type of slavery, voluntary servitude. Voluntary servitude is an ancient and established concept. It was the way serfs became subjects to their lords during feudal times in England and other European countries. It was a way for free men to earn a living at a time when all property was held by a select few, and thus anyone who wanted to farm and support their family had first to agree to be subject to a lord of the land. Our forefathers hated this concept and designed our Constitution to exclude titles of nobility, making all Americans sovereign. The 14th Amendment turned the intention of the founders on its ear by making voluntary servitude a requirement for former slaves to gain the rights already guaranteed to free-born United States citizens. When the slaves were released from their involuntary servitude following the war, their status was changed from that of being property to that of being a person. But being a person still entitled them to none of the rights associated with citizenship. So the 14th Amendment ostensibly was written to provide the former slaves with the same constitutional rights of freeborn American citizens, but only if they agreed first to become subject to the jurisdiction of the corporate United States, making oneself paramountly, that is, first subject to the jurisdiction of the laws of the United States, however, limits access to parts of the Bill of Rights, as we'll explain in a moment. But first remember, anyone who voluntarily subjects himself to the laws or jurisdiction of another is, in every way, obligated to abide by the terms of any contracts or laws established by whomever establishes the rules of the contract. In simple terms, this meant that the former slaves became subjects first to the United States, and secondly to the state in which they lived. They had no sovereignty whatsoever. This status had never existed in the United States prior to that time. The 14th Amendment created a new class of citizenship in the United States, a second-class citizenship. Up until 1868, every American was a paramount citizen of their state, and by virtue of that, also a citizen of the United States, with full individual sovereignty as guaranteed by Amendments 9 and 10 in the Bill of Rights. But so-called naturalized citizens, or 14th Amendment citizens, are paramountly subject to all laws of the United States, and, having no status as freeborn citizens, have no access at all to the unenumerated rights retained for the people by Articles 9 and 10 of the Bill of Rights. That's because, in order to get any rights at all, they had to subject themselves to the jurisdiction of the corporate United States, which left them no unenumerated rights. The only rights they had were those specifically written into the Constitution. The sad tragedy of America today is that all U.S. citizens, regardless of race, are now 14th Amendment slaves due to contracts with the government of the United States through Social Security, birth certificates, driving licenses, citizenship statements, tax forms, and many other documents. The true paramount citizenship that all Americans deserve is that of their respective state, which is a sovereign citizenship. Such status would exempt them from federal and state income taxes, as well as property and inheritance taxes. This sovereign citizenship was the status held by our forefathers. Now, if you're still thinking that the U.S. government needs to have a central bank and collect income tax or it will collapse, think again. Over two-thirds of the federal government's income is derived from sources other than income tax. There is even evidence suggesting that none of your income tax is used by the government. Fees, excise taxes, tariffs, sales taxes, and other forms of income have easily supported the U.S. budget in the past and could easily support it now. We have done without a national bank for large stretches of our history, and the U.S. Treasury is perfectly capable of printing and managing a money supply. In fact, the only constitutionally sanctioned currency is backed by gold or other precious metals. This is a far more stable form of currency and is the type of money the Treasury was designed to handle. The government was doing so well collecting money under these original laws that it had amassed a huge surplus by the time this cartoon was penned 100 years later in 1887, when there still was no income tax collected at all. Up to this point, we have shown you how the money interests have, one, established the Federal Reserve System, and two, exploited a second class of citizenship created by the 14th Amendment for other purposes, and we have mentioned a few names involved in the creation of the Fed. But there are other organizations working for our economic enslavement as well, along with other extremely rich and powerful international bankers. Those who support the Fed have created a global movement to centralize economic power in various puppet organizations that preach peace and stability through some variation of socialism, but act aggressively to draw nations into a web of foreign debt and servitude to their agenda. The United Nations, the World Monetary Fund, and the Council on Foreign Relations are all committed to an agenda of world domination through manipulation of economic power. The Council on Foreign Relations openly admits to being a private club, yet it is the primary recruiting post in both international banking and the federal government of the United States. Richard Nixon, Nelson Rockefeller, John Foster Dulles, Dean Rusk, Alger Hiss, Robert S. McNamara, and every president since FDR, with the exception of John Kennedy, have been members of this exclusive club where super financiers and your elected representatives can mix freely and plan the next step in the consolidation of power in a new world order.
the mighty set. Santana, what's up? More like a movement you need be in tune with. Killer the Dawn, what's good?
Crack music, crack.
From the cops and the feds,
check that out.
A big difference from the Dawn and trap head. I told them use it as my casket if I drop dead. Money, power, respect is what the lock said. You showed a lot of locker, respect is what the cops said.
Fuck the cops.
Paparazzi flicks on the six page.
Click, click, click.
Grammy bunch with the 40s by the rib cage. With my jacks, we want to be this like Big Dave.
R.I.P.
I've been buying roadies since a kid's age.
My ninth one.
4, 5, 6, top in the 7 series.
Bank style.
With drop top shit, I can see heaven clearly.
Pray for me.
Try to put them on the game, but they never hear me.
Stupid.
Maybe in Texas, the closest that you getting near me. Shit, cause life is so ferocious that it's getting scary. It's hard to stay focused, my eyes are getting teary.
Optimus, what up, nigga?
Diplomatic community.
Hey, yo, Capo, what up, man?
Unity.
Wait, some talent shit, huh?
Unity.
Shit almost got me.
Diplomatic
immunity. Yeah. After I fuck, all these girls wanna spoil with me. Come get into me. I'm shining like the sun, and girl, you looking like the moon to
yes,
me.
Yes, you are.
Your man a goon, he's scared to be in the room with me.
That's detrimental.
Sure is. I don't deal with anything that's sentimental. Had cocaine in the rental.
Avis.
Nothing sweet, but all my sweets are presidential.
Yep.
Dead presidents, I'm done with residential.
Why's that?
What I mean, man, I bought my own zip code.
Oh.
Leave me alone, I go flip mode.
What's
don't
that?
Care if you black with a big nose, white with pig toes. Just how the shit goes, the kid with the sick flow. Jewelry, got Bruce Leroy, slash Slick Rick Glow. Fuck is you, Negro?
Negro, 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 Negro.
She was crazy.
Diplomatic immunity, 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 immunity.
Community, community, community,
community. Do you know what the fifth is?
Yes, Father, I know what the fifth is. The fifth is I refuse to stand on the grounds that I'm not a criminal.
The fifth commandment.
Thou shalt not kill.
That's right. Now I want you to tell me what happened.
No, Father. I'm not telling nobody nothing.
Don't be afraid, my son. Nobody's more powerful than God.
I don't know about that, Father. Your guy's bigger than my guy up there. So my dad's bigger than your guy down here.
Tune in every Sunday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on The Bottom Line with Joey L. on the New Evolution Radio Network.
All right, all right, all right. What's happening? Peace to the gods. Welcome to the show. Right here on The Bottom Line. Caller number is 515, area code 602-9793. That's 515-602-9793. You are live. And if you want to holler at me, make sure that you press 1, get yourself in the call. All right. So, and let's just be clear. I'm not doing as long shows as I used to, because I want to get straight to the point. And so if you're just now calling in, you haven't missed anything, because they gave me a hard time getting in anyways. All right. So let's get right to it tonight. I want to talk about, trust injunctions, and to be clear, when I do the seminar that's coming up in New York, I've got a couple of seminars coming up. So when I do the seminar in New York, which is going to be at the Carbon Juice Lounge, let me just give y'all the information for these seminars right quick before we get into it. So Carbon Juice Lounge is 2154 2nd Avenue, New York, New York. You can buy tickets at the door. I will be there. That's hosted by my man Shaka. And that's at the Carbon Juice Lounge. That's Saturday, July 8th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. That's July 8th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. All right. And then we have another seminar coming up later in July, which is going to be in Miami. And that one is at the Residence Inn Marriott Surfside. The address for that one is 9200 Collins Avenue, That one is July the 22nd, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can also get tickets at the door or in advance. If you have questions, you can call the number that's on the flyer. All right. We will be going deeper into this subject when we are at the seminar, so I can actually show y'all in person how this is done as well. All right. So let's just jump into it tonight. So we're talking about the nature of doing injunctions for your trust, and this is probably one of the more controversial subjects for people, because there are so many different types of trust. Okay, and when we start talking about trust, we have to remember that trusts are public trust, and then there are private trust. There are statutory trust and constitutional trust, right? And so the constitutionality of your trust, it greatly depends upon how you set your trust up. And so I want to remind people that the way that you set your trust up, okay, will also help determine the level of protection that it has, okay? Now, the whole point of us doing an injunction for the trust is to help protect the private property of the trust. Right now, a lot of people have done injunctions, and that's fine. And that is an injunction for yourself personally. But you have to remember that an injunction is needed for your trust, right? Because your trust is an actual person in many circumstances, right? So I like to use what's known as the Hague Convention. A lot of people overlook the Hague Convention, and we all have overlooked the Hague Convention for what it truly represents, right? And I know most people have been told, well, we just use the Hague Convention for our birth certificates, right? But we need to understand what the Hague Convention is so we can really get into this, right? And so understanding the Hague Convention, right, deals with protection of children, first of all, okay? And it deals with cooperation, right, in respect to the what we call the Inter-Country Adoption Convention, which is an international agreement that was done to help safeguard adoptions, okay? So it deals with children, okay? It deals with minors. It deals with those who have not reached the legal age of majority, okay? The ability to contract, right? So in 1993, on May the 29th, the Hague Convention was done in the Netherlands, right? The convention essentially established a standard or a protocol, if you will, for adoptions, okay, and how this was supposed to be done. So the United States signed the convention in 1994, okay? So the convention then entered into full force in the United States on April the 1st, 2008, okay? Now, the convention applies to all adoptions, right, when we talk about U.S. citizens, okay? Habitually, people who reside in what they call, quote, the United States, right, deals with children in the United States. And remember, they consider you to be a minor, right, consider you to be part of the majority, right, especially depending upon your nationality. They really consider you to be less than, right? And so this is one of the reasons why a trust is so important, especially if you have authenticated your birth certificate, because what happens is that you essentially have put yourself in a position where you're letting them know that you are not a minor and that you can control your own commercial affairs. But then where's your protection? So understand, and I know that, you know, we're talking about adoption, right? But adoption is very important, because what do you think was done to you at your birth? You were adopted. So adopting a child or a minor, okay, from a convention country, essentially any country that has become a signatory or a signer in many ways is adopting a child from a country, right, that's not party to the convention. So there's some key differences here, and in particular, those that seek to adopt or seek to be emancipated, if you will, need to have some type of protection. Okay? And so when we really start looking at the Hague Convention for what it took, and really the Hague Convention goes, it actually goes back to the 1800s. So you can go back to 1899 and 1907, right, where they did a series of treaties and declarations, basically that negotiated international peace conferences and things like that. So the Hague's been around for a while, but the Hague was essentially put into place in the 90s to really deal with adoption, okay? So, and I want to be clear on this as we dive into the subject. Now, I want to give y'all a working understanding here. So, excuse me, I'm going to pull up just a second. Okay, so I want to talk about equitable relief when it comes to protections, right? And as we dive into this, you'll understand that equitable relief applies to your trust as well, right? And so there's tort law and then there's contract law. Okay, so under tort law, right, when we talk about injunctions, tort injunctions, there's no adequate remedy in law, okay? Enforcement is what they call feasible, okay? And then the balancing of equities, essentially, which deals with no undue hardship on a defendant as a result of an injunction. So this takes us to what we talk about as specific performance, right? And specific performance, and I want to give y'all a working definition of it. Okay, just a second. Y'all stick with me because I'm building a house, right? We gotta have a solid foundation here. So specific performance deals with the performance of a contractual duty as ordered in cases where damages would not be adequately remedied, if you will, right? So a specific performance deals with contracts, okay? So specific performance is an equitable remedy that you have, okay, when there's a contract. And so understanding that everything is a contract, just like an injunction is a contract, a trust is a contract, right? And courts abide by the contract. So an injunction, quite often, concerning confidential information or real property, is a type of subset or specific performance, and basically is one of the more commonly used forms of specific performance, is injunctions. So while specific performance can be in the form of any type of, quote, forced action, whether it's forced by you or forced by a court, or because remember, you are your own judge, right? So it is usually to complete a previously established transaction, thus being the most effective remedy in protecting the expectation, okay, of the innocent party, okay? So it's usually the opposite of a prohibitory injunction. And so we're not talking about prohibitory injunctions, okay? But there are mandatory injunctions that have similar effects as the specific performance. So when you do a injunction for your trust, you are doing a little bit of both. You're creating a specific performance for somebody to perform an act, right? And then at the same time, you're asking them to prohibit somebody from performing an act. Okay? Now, at common law, when you talk about common law, right, and the courts of equity deal with common law, right, and they deal with specific performance, and these deal with damages, things like that. So specific performance is often guaranteed through the remedy of a right of possession, giving the plaintiff the right to take possession of the property. So how do you protect your property? And this is what we essentially, you know, are getting down to, is protecting your property. So as with all equitable remedies, right, specific performance are discretionary, so their availability depends on the appropriateness of the circumstance. So what is the circumstance at hand that essentially calls for you to be protected? Okay, and we talked about this too before, right, with protected persons, right? You cannot be harmed and threatened and put in danger, right, you know, really by anyone, especially if there's an injunction in place. Here's where we get into, you know, the details of this, right? As with all equitable remedies, specific performances are discretionary, so their availability depends upon the appropriateness of the circumstance, all right? So I like to use the Hague Convention, especially when I'm talking about doing trust. And I'm gonna go into the different articles here so that you can understand how this thing works, okay? So the Hague Convention on the law of what they call applicable laws to trust, right? And it deals with the recognition of your trust. So here and after it's referred to as the Hague Convention on Trust. It was proposed that the state or the parties that signed it, right, they called it the final act of the 15th session of the Hague Convention. There was basically what they called the Conference on Private International Law. So now we're talking about private law. This is what it boils down to. Okay, so the convention came into force on January the 1st, 1992, with ratifications by Australia, Italy, and the United Kingdom. It is since ratified or acceded to by Canada, partially China, okay, Liechtenstein, Luxembourg, which is Germany, okay, Malta, Monaco, the Netherlands, San Marino, and Switzerland. Okay? This is why we talk about international banking and money and stuff like that. This is where a lot of this comes into play at. So the United States of America signed the convention June 13th, 1988, but it's not yet ratified the convention, and therefore the convention has not become legally binding, you know, on certain entities in the United States, and this is why your trust must have an injunction. So this takes me to what's known as the Uniform Trust Code, okay, which was first proposed for adoptions by individual states of the United States by the U.S. National Conference on Commissioners on the Uniform State Laws in the year of 2000, okay? So the primary purpose of this article, right, that I'm reading from right now is to help you understand what the UTC is and why the Hague Trust Convention, you know, is even a thing, okay? So the Hague Trust Convention, it was put in place to recognize trust in the United States or anywhere else. So I'm gonna read each article, and then we'll take a break and then we'll come back because there's a lot to this and I don't wanna confuse people. Okay, so right off the bat, okay, there's the nature of the trust. So the preamble to the convention notes that, quote, the trust, as developed in courts of equity in common law jurisdictions and adopted with some modifications in other jurisdictions, is a unique legal institution. So right off the bat, your trust is what's known as a legal institution. So what am I saying here? I'm encouraging you to understand the power of the trust. Okay, you define a trust because they can't define a trust, and nobody can define what the trust is except for you. And this is why we use things like treaties, constitutions, preambles, things like that, right? And this is one of the reasons why I told y'all early on it's best to put quotations in your trust to help people understand what the trust is. What's the purpose of the trust? Okay? Article 2 of the convention provides that for purposes of the convention, the term trust refers to the legal relationship that's created inter vivos or on the death of a person, right? It deals with the settlor when assets have been placed under control of a trustee for the benefit of a beneficiary or a specific purpose. Now, the UTC section 402 provides that a trust is created only if the settlor has the capacity to create a trust. So where's your mental capacity? Do you have the mental capacity to create a trust? So, and that's a big question, you know, that comes into play. You start talking about guardians ad litem, guardianship and shit like that, right? Does this individual have the legal capacity? Right now, the thing about it is, and I'll say this, and I've always said this shit, right? Nobody controls my shit. I control my shit. You control your shit, right? You know, my old man used to tell me, he used to say, infringing on your rights is also an infringement upon my own rights, right? So don't go infringing on other people's rights with your trust, right? Respect my shit, I respect yours. It goes both ways, that type of thing, right? So the UTC section 402 provides that a trust is created only if the settlor has the capacity to create a trust. So the settlor indicates an intention to create the trust. So the trust has a definite beneficiary, or is a charitable trust, right? Which is a trust that is created for the care of an animal. Okay, and by the way, if you have animals, I recommend that you put your animals into your trust, right? Protect your animals. You have to, right? Or trust for a non-charitable purpose, right? That's provided in Section 409. Right, so the trustee has duties to perform, and the same person is not the sole trustee or the sole beneficiary. So understanding that what I'm reading to you is the Hague Convention on Trust, because it deals with your trust. Okay? Now, Article 2 of the convention also states that the trust has the following three characteristics. Number one, the assets constitute a separate fund and are not part of the trustee's own estate. Number two, title to the trust assets stand in the name of the trustee or in the name of another person on behalf of the trustee. And three, the trustee has the powers and the duties in respect of which he is accountable to manage, employ, or dispose of the assets in accordance with the terms of the trust. Right? So how are you disposing of your assets, right? You have assets. You know, your body is an asset, right? If you put insurance on your trust, or insurance, because you can actually add life insurance to your trust, believe it or not. If you don't know how to do it, hit me up, and I'll show you how it's done. You can add life insurance to your trust, and I recommend that you do, right? I recommend that everybody has life insurance, right? Especially whole life insurance. Because this is another way to help with the injunctions. Because the thing is that, do you realize that you become more valuable, your life becomes more valuable when there's insurance placed on your life? That's the first part of it. But not only do you become more valuable, but what happens essentially is that the powers that be, if you will, essentially look at your life as being worth more. So you're worth more, right? And because you're worth more, they have more of an incentive to not only keep you alive, but they have an incentive to make sure that you're protected. You understand that? And this is why they tell you to put insurance on your cars, you know, and on your, excuse me, on your cars and on your house and, you know, tangible shit, right? But the most tangible thing that I would say that is around that's important is your body. Okay? So the UTC does not use the phrase separate fund, right? Which means that it's all inclusive. Okay? Go to the next one, right? Article 3 of the convention provides that the convention applies only to trust created voluntarily and evidenced in writing, which means that you have to put this shit in writing. Now, when you do your injunctions for your trust, I'm essentially telling you that you might want to use the Hague Convention, because the Hague Convention deals with trust and how trust can be protected. So when you're doing an injunction, you're following international law. See, there's the IJC, International, or ICJ, International Court of Justice, right? International Court of Justice is not protecting U.S. citizens. Why do you think they never stepped in on race matters? International Court of Justice are protecting nationals. They're protecting trust. They are protecting international assets. So for you to become an international asset, protection of a trust, and you must be following the international treaties and conventions that were put in place for trust. So while the Uniform Trust Code allows for the possibility of what they call an oral trust, it does not contradict the convention in respect of written trust. So Article 20 of the convention provides that, quote, any contracting state, a.k.a. your trust, may at any time declare that the provisions of the convention will be extended to trust declared by judicial decisions. Perhaps such trust could encompass oral trust recognized by judicial decisions. You do realize that oral trust is you just having a conversation. It's you talking. Right? So, and I'll give you an example. Right now, I declare that myself, my person, my soul, my being, my essence, they're all protected under my express trust. That's an oral trust. And then you follow that up in writing, and you put it in writing. And that's essentially how it's done, right? Now, Article 4 of the convention provides that it does not apply to the preliminary issues relating to the validity of wills or other acts by virtue of which assets are transferred to the trustee. So the Uniform Trust Code does not contain a similar express provision limiting the scope of the validity of wills. So wills are important, right? And the wills deal with property that's transferred to a trustee. So it's always important to have a will to place the content of the will into the trust, right? However, nothing in the Uniform Trust Code supplements provisions of the Uniform Probate Code, right, or other local probate law. So, and this is the reason why you don't want to have something where you've never put anything in writing, and so you pass and shit goes intestate. You don't want that to happen, because if it goes intestate, all of your stuff ends up in probate, right, because you didn't write anything down. Very important. All my shit's written down. My shit is, you know, my shit's in trust, right? I don't plan on dying no time soon, right? I plan on living a long life, which I hope that you do as well. But in the event that something unfortunate happens, you want to make sure this shit is written down properly. You feel what I'm saying? Now, when we get to, if you come to the seminar, right, which I hope that some of y'all do come to the seminars, right, we're going to go through this in really deep detail, and I'll show you how I've done my own trust injunction, right? Now, Article 6, just a second, y'all, my dog's barking. Let me, just a moment. All right, so Article 6, right, when we deal with Article 6 of the convention, all right, Article 6 essentially introduces the convention's provisions regarding applicable law. Okay? So Article 6 provides that a trust shall be governed, check it out, a trust shall be governed by the law chosen by the settlor. Let me say it again. A trust shall be governed by the law chosen by the settlor. So further, it provides that where the law chosen by the settlor does not provide for trust or the category of trust involved, the choice shall not be effective and the law specified in Article 7 shall apply. So I need to reiterate this because I think that this is extremely important. If you do not specify, the law that you want your trust to be governed by, they'll do it for you. You understand that? They'll do the shit for you. So Article 7 of the convention provides that where no applicable law has been chosen, a trust shall be governed by the law of which it is most closely connected. Y'all get that? So, and I think that this is really important, too, because when we start talking about Muslim law, things like that, right? Right? And salam alaikum to all my Muslims. But when you start talking about law, right, you need to choose the most peaceful law, right? And this is why we chose the Treaty of Peace and Friendship, right, as a treaty. But you need to choose the most peaceful laws. Hell, if you need to choose the law of Buddha, right, for peace, right? I'm not telling you to become a monk. I'm not telling you to take a vow of poverty or anything like that. What I'm telling you to do is to choose. Hell, if you need to create your own, you do that. But you need to choose the most peaceful of laws, because what's going to happen is that if you don't, they're going to choose the shit for you. These motherfuckers will try to hang you. They'll try to say that you committed treason when all you was trying to do was protect your personal property. This is how these people think. So it's important for you to understand, overstand, understand Article 6 Convention when you're talking about your trust. Okay? Article 7 will choose the shit for you if you don't. So a trust shall be governed by the law in which it is most closely connected. Relevant factors include the place of administration of the trust designated by the settlor, the situs of the assets of the trust, which means what did you put into the trust? What did you put into the trust when you decided that you was going to create this mug? Okay? So there's that. The relevant factors include the place of administration of the trust, designated by the settlor, the situs of the trust, the place of residence or business of the trustee, and the objects of the trust, the places where they are to be fulfilled. I keep trying to tell you, you judge, jury, and executioner. You are. Not another man, not another woman. You are the individual that I created the trust for. I created my own express trust. Okay. I got several of them. I created the tribal trust, right? I'm not giving another man or woman permission over me. No, we're not doing that. So if I don't do it, somebody else will. Okay? So Uniform Trust Code Section 107, it provides that the meaning and the effect the terms of the trust are determined by the law of the jurisdiction designated in terms, unless the designation of that jurisdiction's law is contrary to a strong public policy of the jurisdiction having the most significant relationship to the matter at issue, or two, in the absence of a controlling designation in terms of the trust, the law of the jurisdiction having the most significant relationship to the matter at issue. This is why, you know, I did the webinars about a year ago on treaties, which unfortunately had low numbers, but, you know, people people don't understand what they don't, you know, you don't know what you don't know, and you don't know what you need if you don't know that you need it, right? And that's just the unfortunate part about some of this shit. All right, now, UGC Section 107 also states that this section is consistent with and partially patterning on the Hague Convention on the law applicable to trust and their recognition signed on July 1st, 1985. So like this section, the Hague Convention allows the settler to designate the governing law, Article 6 of the Convention. Absent a designation, the Convention provides that the trust is to be governed by the law of the place having the closest connection to the trust. Okay? Extremely important. Now, you could take, and if you haven't done this, I recommend that you do it as soon as possible. Okay? This is contract law. You decide this shit, not them. Right? Because you got some rogue officials out here, right, who want to control you. They want to control your assets. They want to control how you move. So the comment also goes to Article 15 of the convention, right, which lists particular public policies for which the forum can decide to override the choice of law that would otherwise apply. So this takes me to Article 8. Article 8 of the convention lists matters to which the law specified in Article 6 and Article 7 of the convention should be governed. So in general, the concerns or whatever, you know, this deals with the validity of your trust. It deals with the construction of the trust. It deals with the effects of your trust. Right, and the administration of your trust. So you say, well, why are you talking about the Hague Convention if we're talking about doing injunctions? Because the Hague Convention tells you how to do your injunction for your trust, the resignation, the removal of trustees, the capacity to act as a trustee, the devolution of the office of the trustee, the rights and the duties of trustees among themselves, the rights of trustees to delegate in whole or in part the discharge of their duties or the exercise of their powers, the powers of the trustees to administer or dispose of trust assets, to create security interest in the trust assets. So there's your securities right there, right? Or to acquire new assets, the power of investment of trustees, restrictions upon the duration of trust. And by the way, BOEs, bills of exchange, bills of exchange are created through trust that are not, we're not talking about statutory trust. We're talking about private trust. Also deals with the personal liability of the trustees. Okay? Personal liability to the beneficiaries. The variation of termination of trust. The distribution of trust assets. The duty of trustees to the account for the administration. You see how all of this comes into play? Okay? So, this is very broad, and we talk about this, but this list clearly encompasses issues about the validity of the trust and the administration of a trust that do not basically fall within the scope of what we call choice of law provisions. Okay? Which basically concern the choice of law for issues dealing with the meaning of the terms of a trust. Okay? So, and it can be, it's broad, right? So, under the Uniform Trust Code, issues regarding whether a trust has been validly created are determined by the Uniform Trust Code, Section 403, in the authority of a settler to designate a trust principal of administration and thereby implicitly the law applicable to the administration. So it's all governed under UTC Section 108A. Okay? So Section 403 of the UTC is set, and this is what it says. It provides, quote, that a trust not created by will is validly created if its creation complies with the laws of the jurisdiction in which the trust instrument was executed or the law of the jurisdiction in which at the time of creation, number one, the settler was domiciled or had a place of abode or was a national. You want me to, I'll read it again. The settler was domiciled, had a place of abode, or was a national. Are you a national? Because it makes sense, you know, if you're a national, right? Number two, a trustee was domiciled or had a place of business. Or three, any trust property was located. It must be conceded then that the extent, Article 6 of the Convention, with the application of Article 8 of the Convention, allows a settler to designate the law of the jurisdiction to govern questions about the validity of the trust. Okay? This shit is so straightforward. By the way, if you want to holler at me, make sure that you press 1 so I can get you in my queue, okay? We will open it up for questions. All right, now, Article 7 of the Convention, right, the law of trust, when a settler has not made a direction about governing law, right? So you need to make a direction about how your trust is governed. If you need to go back and change some shit, I recommend that you do. Right? You know, when I saw this, this immediately made me say, okay, I got to change some things in terms of how my trust is governed. Do you want to, listen, you want to be protected by the full force of the law, right? And if you need to put in special protections, then you do that, right? Protect your people, things like that. And I'll give you an example. I was watching this movie. It was called The Emperor, right? It's a pretty good movie. I recommend you check it out. It's on like Tubi and shit like that. But so the Emperor of Japan was a protected person, right? They had him under the United States protection up until they bombed Nagasaki. And so when they bombed Nagasaki, if you are familiar with the history of Japan and the bombing, when they bombed Nagasaki and all of that, Japan surrendered. Okay, so when Japan surrendered after the bombing, the emperor under President Roosevelt lost his protection of the under the United States, and they decided that they wanted to hang him. Right, and so they started arresting officials in Japan, and they went on a manhunt for the emperor of Japan, even though the people of Japan were still praising the emperor, like, nah, this is our dude, right? But they went on a manhunt to go hang him. I need y'all to get this. They tried to hang the emperor. How you the emperor and they trying to hang you? Right? Now, we're talking about Uniform Trust Code, right? We're talking about the Hague Convention, which went back all the way into the 1800s, okay? Just think, had Japan had, you know, and Japan, trust me, they got trust set up in Japan. They do. But just think if Japan was operating under the auspices, right, at that time, under a peace convention or under the Treaty of Peace and Friendship. I think the United States has always had the protection. I'm talking about the corporation. Why do you think they've always had the protection of the empire of Morocco? Because they chose for the supreme law to be the Treaty of Peace and Friendship. They chose the supreme law to be the Treaty of Peace and Friendship, which means that their trust indenture, their declaration of trust, right, always stays in place. You can't touch them. Can't touch this. Nah, 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 nah. You know, they on MC Hammer shit, right? So, Section 403, right, it gives a range of options for the validity of the trust, right? And it's pretty broad in ranges of determining under Article 7 of the Convention the laws of the trust when the settler has not made a direction about the governing law, okay? So, UTC Section 403 allows us options, the law of the jurisdiction where the settler was domiciled. Okay? So remembering that a settler of an inter vivos trust can effectively choose any law the settler wishes to govern the trust under. Right? It deals with the questions about the validity of the trust by making sure that the settler executes the trust instrument in the jurisdiction whose law the settlor performs to govern the questions of the trust validity. You know, when we deal with this and you indicate, and I need to be clear here, you need to indicate how your trust is governed. Okay. Hopefully they plan. Okay, this is it. They plan with my phone now. All right, so when we get into Section 8, you know, we have to, y'all give me just a moment here, because they're messing with my phone. Apologize on the delay. They start messing with my phone and all of that, pulling up windows and shit. It's crazy. You know, and one of the reasons I know a lot of people were wondering why I hadn't been on the radio as much, is a lot of it's because they was messing with my technology, and, you know, I just got tired of that shit, man. So I took a break for a while, you know, and I just, you know, you get tired of them fucking with your shit, you know. And they do this, you know, and then I get another phone and they mess with it and that, and, you know, it's just a lot of bullshit. So remember that even your phones, you got to put them under your trust too, because they'll fuck with your phone lines. Don't think that they won't. Okay, I've had other people tell me they've experienced these problems as well. All right, so let me keep going though. All right, Section 108A provides that without precluding other means for establishment or establishing a sufficient connection with the designated jurisdiction, a settler's designation of the trust's principal place of administration is valid in controlling if, number one, a trustee's principal place of business is located in or in a trustee's resident of the designated jurisdiction. Excuse me. Two, all a part of the administration occurs in the designated jurisdiction, which means that you need to be living in the jurisdiction where your trust was set up at. And then, like this, if you decide to travel or something like that, you put injunctions in place, you know, for your ability to travel. This is one of the reasons why when it was first taught, when Dunn first started teaching people about injunctions years ago, he used to tell people, send your injunctions to different places, right? That was a very good thing to tell people, because what happens is that when you go different places, you don't want to be fucked with. I don't want you fucking with me if I decide, you know, that I want to take a road trip 4 or 5 states away. I want to be protected 1,000 miles away, 100,000 miles away. I want to be protected the same anywhere around the world as if I was at home where I set up my trust. Okay? So the administration and the interest of the beneficiaries is always important, right? So the choices under UTC Section 108, they're not very broad, right? But theoretically, when we start talking about Article 7 of the Convention, trustees would have under Section 108C broad authority without court approval. Let me say it again. A trustee has broad authority without court approval to move the place of administration to a place directed by the terms of the trust, at least as long as no qualified beneficiaries object. See, this is why I keep trying to tell you, you don't need people asking, well, how do you do an injunction without having a judge do it? Because you are the judge. 3 notaries make a judge. 3 notaries make a judge. You can put an affidavit together and have it signed 3 different times by 3 different notaries and put it into your trust, and that confirms that there was a judgment in place. Now, it doesn't protect, you know, ill will, and it doesn't protect you doing bullshit and stuff like that, because they will find a way to circumvent and pierce your shit. Right? They will pierce the darkness, if you will. Right? And you don't have time for that. Right? Now, even though the right of the settlor of the trust is designated by the governing law of the trust under Article 6 of the convention, it's not absolute, okay? Because the form contains the right to apply its own laws in certain key areas of concern, okay? And this is what I'm saying. Whereas if you venture out to hurt somebody or to damage property, right, things like that, then, yeah, you're going to have these people come in and step in, and they're going to attempt to pierce the trust. But the convention does not prevent the application of those provisions of the law or the form in which must be applied, even though international situations, irrespective of the rules of conflict, of laws, and all that stuff, right? Okay? So just keep that in mind, okay? So I'm going to jump to Article 11, okay? And Article 11 of the convention establishes the criteria for determining what a trust, listen closely, it establishes the criteria for determining what trust the treaty's jurisdiction must recognize, even if the trust is established in another jurisdiction or the treaty's jurisdiction does not have the legal institution of the trust in its own law. I'll read it again. Article 11 establishes the criteria for determining what trust a treaty jurisdiction must recognize, even if the trust is established in another jurisdiction. Okay? So a trust created in accordance with the law specified by the preceding chapter, Chapter 2, which sets forth the applicable law it governs, shall be recognized as a trust. So such recognition shall imply as a minimum that the trust property constitutes a separate fund, that the trustee must sue or may sue and be sued in his capacity as a trustee, and that he may appear or act in the capacity before a notary or any other person acting in official capacity. What did I say about a notary? See? It's not me just saying this shit. This is what it actually is. You did? As I stated previously, the Uniform Trust Code does not use the phrase separate fund. Okay? So such concept is inherent in the provision. So Section 811 requires that a trustee take reasonable steps to enforce claims of the trust and then to defend claims against the trust. This is, you know, that's one of the reasons why you stay on the radio, you know, and you listen to these shows, things like that. This is one of the reasons why you stay diligent, you know, in your everyday activities, because you have to take reasonable steps to make sure that you stay educated on how to protect your trust and your assets and things like that. Okay? But Article 11, essentially, of the convention, has a list of several attributes of trust that recognition of trust should imply. And I'm going to give them to you, right? Then we'll take a quick break and come back. So the first one is that personal creditors of the trustee do not have any resources against trust assets. Let me say that again, because that's important. Personal creditors of the trustee do not have resources against the trust assets. What does that mean? That means that if the trustee owes a power bill or a gas bill or some shit like that, right, you can't come after the trust assets. This is one of the reasons why the trustee needs to become a member of the trust or an asset of the trust. I'm an asset of the trust. You can't come after me. So, and this is the reason why we used to do, a long time ago when we first started doing a lot of this stuff, they would tell people that you want to do UCC, right, and you want to claim yourself on the UCC as property. Because if you own you, and you owe yourself, nobody else can come forth and say that you owe them, because you owe yourself first. Nigga, I don't owe you shit. I owe myself. I got to pay me first before I can pay you. That type of thing, right? This is important, okay? B, if the trust assets do not form part of the trustee's estate upon his insolvency or bankruptcy. Okay? C, that the trust assets do not form part of the matrimonial property of the trustee or his spouse, of the trustees estate. So if you're married and you have issues with your wife and things like that, and you've acquired a lot of, you've amassed a lot of capital, right, and you plan on getting divorced or something like that, you don't want to have to give your wife all of your shit or your husband all of your shit. This is why people do prenups, but even more so than prenups, you got to be on top of this thing and make sure that everything's protected by the trust, okay? D, the trust assets may be recovered when the trustee has mingled trust assets with his own property in breach of trust, okay? So, as noted above, the Uniform Trust Section 507 provides that the trust property is not subject to personal obligations of the trustee, even if the trustee becomes insolvent or bankrupt, and thus impediently not subject to claims of the trustee's heirs. Okay? But so there's that. All right? Article 12, and then we'll take a break. Article 12 provides that where trustees desire to register assets, movable or immovable, or documents of title to them, that carry your birth certificate, right? He shall be entitled insofar as this is not prohibited by or inconsistent with the laws of the state where registration is sought, to do so in his capacity as a trustee or in any other such way that the existence of the trust is disclosed. So, Section 810 of the UTC requires a trustee to keep adequate records of the administration of the trust and to keep property separate from the trustee's own property. This is one of the reasons why the trustee gives all his property over to his trust, especially if he's the settler of the trust. Then he's just using everything, right? Own nothing, control everything, that type of thing. Well, I heard a brother one time. He said, why would you never want to own anything and only control it? This is what rich people do. Don't be a fool. Nobody can ever come after you if you don't own shit. Right? I don't own nothing. It's all in the trust name. It's all part of the trust. Now, if there's something that belongs to me that I'm supposed to own, give it to me, and then I'll put it into my trust. But don't withhold it from me. Okay? So the UTC Section 810 provides that a trustee shall cause the trust property to be so designated that the trust interest of the trust, to the extent feasible, appears in records maintained by a party other than a trustee or beneficiary. Okay? All right. So we'll take a quick break because I got a lot more information to give you. Which is, I think, is valuable for those who are listening. All right, the chat is open. If you want to hop in the chat or anything like that, press 1 to get in the call line. All right. Peace to the guy, Skylock. Yeah, I'll put the link in there for you. No problem. Matter of fact, I'll do that on the break. I'll put the link for the convention in the trust in the chat for you. All right. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. Right here on the bottom line. It's Sunday. Call the numbers 515-602-9793. Stay on the line. Don't go nowhere.
They want my spot and don't deserve it. Can't forget that. Who you hitting it? How you missed it? I was a freshman. a nigga in the party. Louis V down, shaved by Bagari. Whole out of body gone off a card. See you on no speak, I'm coming like I'm Cardi. I'll expose you niggas and bitches, I'm back in that molding thing. You niggas is getting too big for your britches, you need some new clothes and things. Why everybody eat money bag? This the topic, nigga. Topic. AP on me, cost a bag. Water faucet, nigga. Never ever did some stuff of shit like pay to take a nigga off a show. She a green light, she a goat. Mac on a fucking duster hoe. Any else? About what? Well, I got big fat.
Big fat, big fat.
You went about it the wrong way, so we can't fix it.
I'm so straight.
She mad at you, so she come fuck me for get back. Next time you bring me up, just make sure you stay big fat.
Tell the truth.
Big fat, big fat.
Big fat, big fat.
Big fat, big fat.
Big fat, big fat.
Tryna shatter me with lies, I ain't with that.
Hey, tell the truth.
Big fat, big fat.
Big fat, big fat.
Big fat, big fat.
Real big fat.
Why they mad? Cause I'm on fire and they ain't lit yet.
What's that, what's that?
And it's big fat.
Big one.
Here goes some more education. Here goes some more speculation.
Here you go.
I took the money and went buy me some guns to light the bitch up like it's Vegas. Keyboard killer, tough on Twitter, making posts, giving statements.
Twitter.
Niggas full of gangs, PlayStation. Can't kill me, I'm a Jason.
Woo.
Yeah, go Fed, Mason.
Federal.
Lock like dreads, Haitian.
Haitian.
You want my place? Take it.
Take it.
Get hit with the drum, cadence. You ain't my partner, nigga. Only hang around of a solid nigga. Say they won't smoke, but when you see them, they none toxic niggas. Ain't no pimp, but get your hoe, before I knock a nigga.
Oh, I knock a nigga.
These little hitters wanna shoot them a movie, album, drop a nigga. Draco, Draco, hit them, it go splat.
Flat.
Turn them into Play-Doh, lay them flat.
Flat.
Drifting in the Audi with the hat. Riding with it on me, never let
any else. About what?
Well, I got big fat.
Big fat, big fat.
You went about it the wrong way, so we can't fix it.
I'm so straight.
She mad at you, so she come fuck me for get back. Next time you bring me up, just make sure you stay big fat.
Tell the truth.
Big fat, big fat.
Big fat, big fat.
Big fat, big fat,
big fat, big fat.
Tryna shatter me with lies, I ain't with that.
Hey, tell the truth.
Big fat, big fat,
big fat, big fat.
Big fat, big fat.
Real big fat.
Why they mad? Cause I'm on fire and they ain't lit yet.
What's that, what's that?
And it's big fat.
Big ones.
Take out a dollar. Turn it all on the back side. Look up in the right-hand corner of over the eagle's head. What do you see? All right. That's the law of correspondence. As above, so below. As within, so without. As without, so within. When you get power of the Spirit, from the Spirit, you have power in heaven, which is in mind, as well as power on the earth, which is in body. Very important to understand that, because the power you're receiving is not to rule somebody else, it's to rule yourself. To heal yourself. To master yourself. To transform yourself. That's what power is for. Then, go heal someone else. If you need a patient, it is you. If you need some pupils, you got them. If you want to do any teaching, work on you. That's your goal. You are your own responsibility. The greatest, most important person you'll ever meet down here is you. You must save you. Even the sister that goes to church is saving herself. But there's so much more that you can do besides go to church. I don't knock church. I'm glad it's there, because it's a godsend and a godsave for black folks. The church is an intricate part of our predicament in the Western Hemisphere. We are, most assuredly, as history relates, a spiritual people. Religion is the beginning of spirituality. Unfortunately, it appears it's becoming interference. Until that reverend finds out more, or lets folks know he knows more, one or the other. Some of them short-step. Some of them do know, and they're not telling. I don't want to get into that. I'm getting all off here. Okay.
In every Sunday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on The Bottom Line with Joey L. on the New Evolution Radio Network.
All right, we back. So let me digress right quick and go back to Article 9 and 10, right? So I skipped over those, and I did that on purpose because Article 9, they left it alone. They left it like And essentially, Article 10 then left it blank as well, right? And it dealt with the law that was applicable to the validity of the trust, right? And they didn't really, they for whatever reason, they found a need to leave 9 and 10 alone, okay? So we'll jump to 12, okay? 12 deals with the trust assets, right, where ownership of assets depend upon the entry in the register. So in England, right, in just like a lot of other common law countries, in the interest of easy marketability of the trust property, the existence of trust is not allowed to be indicated on registers of land or of shares. Okay? Beneficiaries are essentially protected by the overreaching of their rights detached on a sale from land or the shares and the attached to the proceeds and all of that stuff, right? So civil law states that however, knowing nothing of overreaching, right, wanted trust of assets only to be recognized as a valid trust on the insolvency of the trustee if the register indicates that the registered proprietor was the trustee. Okay, so that's where Article 12 comes in. So the United Kingdom felt basically no need for the protection of the article, and they excluded it when otherwise implementing the convention. Okay, so understanding that, you know, places like Italy, right? There have there's been over 100 cases involving the convention, right? But no reliance has been placed upon Article 13, which is the refuse to recognize the effects of a foreign trust. So Italy, being its own what they call trust interni, right, where every factor has been Italian except for the choices of foreign applicable law. So, you know, even the Italians have had to deal with this stuff, right? And so I want to make sure that it's clear, because anywhere around the world, and anywhere and everywhere around the world, everything you see is a trust. Everything that you see is a trust. You know, they take your signature, they securitize it, they take everything you do and they securitize it, and they create trust with the stuff. So the convention does not prevent the application of the provision of law, okay, which designates the rules and the conflicts of the form and all that stuff, right? And essentially relating in particular to the following matters, right? So the protection of minors and incapable parties, personal and proprietary effects of marriage, okay, succession rights, testate, intestate. Succession is when you pass something down from one individual to another, okay, especially the indefeasible shares of spouses and relatives, okay, the transfer of title to property and security interest in property, creditors in matters of insolvency, okay, and then the protection in other respects of third parties acting in good faith, so in recognition of trust, and it's prevented by application, the preceding paragraphs, and blah, 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 right, and all that good stuff. So understanding that, you must understand how this stuff is set up, okay? So I'm going to go to Article 15, okay? Article 15 concerns what they call the domestic, which means at home, mandatory rules of the jurisdiction designated by the forum's choice of laws. So Article 16 requires application of the forum's international mandatory rules that apply irrespective of the PIL rule. So such a rule could prevent a beneficiary from becoming entitled to a heritage object or foreign exchange or weaponry or that are basically things that are subject to restrictions on like import, export, things like that. Okay. So when you start reading these, you know, these different codes and stuff, you have to really understand the nature of the trust, right? Because if you don't understand the nature of your trust and how your trust is set up, right, it's going to be really hard to do an injunction for the trust, especially an injunction that protects you on an international level. Okay? So it must be remembered that the United States started in 1776. And as a very loose confederation of independent states. So through the adoption of the United States Constitution, right, proposed to the states in 1787, the federal or the central government acquired broad powers to lead and to represent the United States in foreign affairs, including the power of the president of the United States, which basically acting with the advice and the consent of the U.S. Senate, they basically enter into binding international treaties on behalf of the United States. So understanding that they put you into the United States at birth, right? You have a right to adopt these treaties. So the Constitution also conferred on the federal government other, quote, express powers to take action in matters both domestic and international concern, but left the balance of government power to rest in and be exercised by the states. Let me tell you something. States are egregious when it comes to trying to violate people's rights. This is the reason why you see things like what happened with, segregation and Selma and, you know, desegregation, things like that, because the federal government had to step in because why? States were overstepping their boundaries and they were violating human rights. Okay? So throughout history, right, there's always been a debate about the implementation of the allocation of powers between federal government and state governments, with advocates for state governments often arguing that the federal government is illegitimately encroaching, if you will, right, on the areas of concern of the states. But if you look at the Constitution, it provides that together with the laws of the United States made pursuant to the Constitution and, quote, all treaties which are made, okay, this includes the Hague Trust Treaty as well, right, under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land. So if you look at the case Missouri versus Holland, right, perhaps the most important U.S. Supreme Court decision on the use of federal treaty power to affect areas of authority, usually considered reserved to the states, the U.S. Supreme Court, per Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, and maybe I'll play that next week for y'all to hear, ruled that a treaty entered into between the United States and the United Kingdom to regulate the flight of migratory birds over the United States and Canada was a valid exercise of the treaty power, even if the regulation of wildlife had heretofore been generally a matter regulated by the states. For whatever reason, they wanted to direct which direction birds go. It's crazy to me, right? But the Constitution, right, never prohibited them by the Constitution, right, limits the range of matters that can be subject to treaties entered into by the U.S. federal government and federal legislation. So understanding that when you are creating your trust, you must put in there a provision where if everything else fails, you could use the Constitution. Because if the 10th Amendment does not prescribe the exercise of the treaty power over the areas otherwise that are presumed left to the authority of the state under the 10th Amendment, then the U.S. ratification of the Hague Convention on Trust should be perfectly legitimate exercise of treaty power. You understand why I'm telling you about the Hague Convention now? This is about your treaty power. All right, so with that being said, I'm going to reserve the rest for next week because there's a lot here, and I want to make sure I get to the call lines before this call is over. All right, so let's jump to 929-260. You're on the line.
Peace to the guys.
What up? Peace to the guys.
So the trustee can put stuff in the trust as well?
His job.
I they protect the property of the trust. They can be put property in the trust themselves?
Yeah, so when you set up a trust, you have a settler who creates the trust, which would be you, okay? Then let's say that during that period of setting up the trust, you have your son come in, and your son becomes a trustee. And you tell your son, look, I want you to take cars that we have and put the cars that we have into the trust. That's trust property. Then your son comes in and he puts all the cars that you have into the trust. Right? He registers them in the trust as trust property. He's a trustee. That's his job. Then let's say that you have a trust protector. The trust protector will come in and make sure that the trustee did his job correctly. Does that make sense?
Overstood, Sensei. I want a clarification on that. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other questions?
Yeah, the website. Going on with Make More Commerce.
Make More Commerce is under construction. That's why it's down right now. Working on putting some things up.
Is it going to be ready before the seminar?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay. Peace, God.
Yep, but if it's something that you need before then, you can always holler at me in the private.
Oh, shit. Your phone be on voicemail.
Oh, yeah, you tried to call me, huh? It was on the phone on voicemail. Yeah. Somebody else did it, too. Yeah, I got two phones, so if I'm not on that one, I'm normally on the other one.
Oh, shit. Hey, yo, God.
I got you, though. I will reach out to you, though, so we can wrap. All right, that's what it is. So I want to be clear, right? And, you know, the topic tonight and what we're dealing with, right, is essentially how to do injunctions to your trust. Okay? So what I'm trying to help people understand is that you need to understand the Hague Convention on trust so that you can do a trust injunction. And if you're at the seminar, I will show you in detail how to do it, right? I'm not just going to read shit to you. I'm going to show you how to do it. But one of the ways that you begin to do this, begin to understand what international law is for your trust, okay? Because international law is important. How you set the trust up is important. Okay? All right. So with that being said, if there's no more questions, we're going to chop it out of here. I'll be on the air this week. I know people were looking for the metaphysics show last week. We'll start that show this week. And we will be back on Open Forum Friday this week as well. So I hope to have y'all there. Hope that y'all listen and tune in. Dr. Offset show is also every Wednesday. Make sure you check her show out. Right? We appreciate her presence. Other than that, man, I'm going to say peace to the gods. All right? Make sure that you get you a copy of, and if you are not in the chat, there's a link for it in the chat. Make sure that you get a copy of that. Right? It's available for download, PDF, and all that good stuff. Right? I don't own it. It's not mine, but, you know, you can get your free copy. All right, of the Hague Convention on the conference and all that stuff on private international law and trust and all that good stuff, all right? All right, so with that being said, man, we're going to get up out of here. Next week, hopefully if we don't have no problems, we will start right away. All right, and with that being said, you listen to The Bottom Line. I'm your host, Joey Balance, LP. And say peace to the gods.
Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here. Nigga, started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now